You're listening to the Sisters in Loss podcast, a faith-based podcast that spotlights Black women who replace silence with storytelling around pregnancy and infant loss and infertility. Black women experience miscarriage and stillbirth 4 to 5 times more likely than white women, according to the NIH and CDC. Whether you've experienced a miscarriage, infant loss, stillbirth, are trying to conceive, or have an infertility diagnosis, you will learn about resources and strategies to heal, gain clarity, peace, hope, and find an empowering path forward after loss. I'm your host, Erica M. McAfee, and you will hear me interview sisters in loss who have healed from such a painful and traumatic experience by sharing their testimonies and stories to inspire and help others turn their pain into their purpose. Now let's get started. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I would love for you to introduce yourself, share a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay. So my name is Christina Danielle. Let's see, I like to describe myself as a social worker because all of my careers have kind of been in that path. But a few years ago, I kind of ventured into international development, really couldn't find my footing there, and then ended up in the world of asylum. So I adjudicate asylum claims with the federal government, and I absolutely enjoy it. It's challenging work. We're busy all the time, but I think I've found my place in my career, and I think I'll be here for a little while. I'm also a West African dancer. I'm a yogi. I like to craft and make jewelry and beads. So yeah, that's a little bit about me. Just moved to Texas, maybe, I think it's 2 years now. So the time is really going by so fast. I'm like, yeah, was it last year or the year before?
Yeah, no, it definitely does that because I feel the same way. I moved to the DC area during the pandemic and felt the same way. It's like, oh my gosh, like, has it been 2 years that I've been here? And it has. But I feel like I haven't really got acclimated here just because of COVID. Like, I'm like, people even know that I'm in the DMV? Some people know, but obviously I haven't really been out there because of the same reason. It's just like, well, I have been here. It's just, I've been in my bubble because of COVID. Yep. COVID has had us down.
Oh my goodness.
Well, obviously you have a journey to motherhood, journey to parenthood that I would love for you to share. So just take us back on that journey and share with us your loss story.
Sure. So I think I'll start with my fibroid diagnosis, because I feel like for a lot of Black women, that's kind of where, you know, that our fertility kind of comes into question or we start to think about it. So I think in 2011, I was 30. I got diagnosed with fibroids. They were small. I wasn't having any symptoms. I was getting ready to live overseas, and I had to be put on a 6-month medical deferral for them to see like if they were growing or whatnot. So everything was fine. I did my overseas tour for 3 years. They didn't grow. But then as soon as I got back to the States, they just kind of grew exponentially. But I still wasn't having any symptoms. So I went to 3 doctors at that time to kind of assess, like, what do I need to do? One doctor was like, you need to open myomectomy. Let's remove them. But the chances of them growing back were high. So I was like, well, what's the point of that if I'm not trying to have a child at this point? Another doctor, he was like, well, yeah, we can do a myomectomy. That's, you know, quick, fast, and easy. But if you're not trying to have a child at this point and you're not having any symptoms, why go through a surgery? And then the third doctor was kind of like, well, choose in the middle. So she's like, it's your choice. So I decided to put that on hold. Fast forward to 2018. I met my husband. Well, I met him in 2015, but we got married in 2018. And so now I'm thinking about my fertility, right? I'm like, I want to have children. You know, I'm getting older. Like, what do I need to do with these fibroids? So I went to an OBGYN where I was living in New Mexico at the time. And the doctor wanted to put me on a medication to shrink the fibroids to then have the open myomectomy. And there was something that I wasn't feeling right about that. So I decided, you know, I'm not going to do that. I didn't want to do the medication. There wasn't a lot of other options as far as OBGYN. So I kind of tabled it for that time. And then, you know, time is progressing. I'm like, I got to do something about this. Like, you know, we were going to have to go through the process of the immigration spouse. So there was going to be some time there, a good time for me to have a myomectomy if I needed one. And so I went and got a second opinion. And this doctor, as soon as she came in, she was like, she looked at my chart and she was like, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't put you on that medication. She was like, I can, you know, you could do an open myomectomy without that medication. I was like, bet, you're my person. And so we went forward with the open myomectomy. She removed 17 fibroids, the largest probably being the size of a grapefruit, and then a couple like apple-sized ones. So had the open myomectomy, things were fine. That was at the end of 2019. So 2020, beginning of 2020, I think March, my husband arrived to the U.S., and we're pregnant by, I think, June or July, surprisingly, right? Like, I'm 39 at this point. I didn't know if it was going to happen so quickly. We were just both surprised. We're still trying to get acclimated to living in a new city, him being, you know, transitioning from living in Ghana to here. So it was a lot of transition for us at that time. I mean, us kind of settling into this married life and what that was going to look like. And now here we are pregnant. So we're both surprised, but it was a welcome surprise. And we're, you know, I think I was more a little scared, I think, just knowing what could happen at any point. We really didn't tell anyone. And because we were new to the city, like we didn't really have a support system or know a lot of people. So, you know, things are kind of moving along. I'm getting used to the idea of being pregnant, and we hit about 20 weeks and I'm like, okay, second trimester, I'm feeling good about this. Like, we can start telling people. So we started sharing the news. And then I went in for my 20 week anatomy scan. And up until that point, you know, you do the NIPT, really didn't have any much understanding. I'm thinking, okay, we've screened for all the genetic possibilities, right? But that's not the case. I learned that later, but at that time I was like, oh, okay, we're good, right? So I wasn't expecting anything with the anatomy scan. So we go in, and the specialist was like, so one of her kidneys is covered in cysts and it's not functioning, and then the other kidney they just did not see at all. So no functioning kidneys meant that there wasn't any amniotic fluid producing, which then meant her lungs weren't going to develop. And so outside of the womb, I learned the term or phrase incompatible with life. So she was not going to be able to live outside of the womb. I think initially it was just like, well, what are you talking about? Like, there's something that can be done, right? There has to be some treatment for this. Like, there has to be something that can be done. It did not resonate with me immediately that she was not going to live outside of my womb. So we got a second opinion. I did a lot of research. I learned that there had been some experimental kind of research studies going on. But by that time, I don't think that I was eligible, and it wasn't even being done where I was living. I was kind of not an option. Got a second opinion, and it kind of started to settle in that this is what it was. And by that time, they gave us the option to terminate. And this was maybe 2 weeks before Thanksgiving when we found out. So we spent a week of like shock and research, and then another week of second opinion. And so by that time, we're kind of right at the cusp of having to make a decision whether we wanted to terminate or not. And it, like I said, it was right before Thanksgiving. So I think there was maybe one or two doctors who could do it. And so they had to kind of make sure that person was going to be available. And so we really literally had like a weekend to decide whether we were going to terminate or not. And I just couldn't do it. By that time, she was moving all around. We had named her. She was very real to us, right? So we decided not to terminate. And so we're moving forward with the pregnancy, not knowing what could happen at any point, right? Because I had the myomectomy, I knew I had to have a C-section. And so that was another kind of element of our decision. It was a faith decision, I think, because I'm like, we could go ahead and do the termination and that could, you know, preserve my uterus. I wouldn't have to have a C-section, but it would also prolong the time that we would have to wait to try again. So all these things are, you know, in playing into the factors of the decision that we're trying to make. But ultimately, like I said, we decided to carry, and, you know, I just committed that time to just being present with her. I wrote a lot to her in my journal. I savored every, because it just didn't even make sense that she was moving all around. She was very active. And I'm like, how is it possible that she can be doing this inside and not be able to, you know, it never really made sense to me until like maybe a couple of months later. So I think at the last minute, I decided to like have my husband take some pictures. I was like, we're going to have to remember and make as many memories as we possibly can. I think one of the things that I found in the midst of all of that, you know, I try to look for gratitude in everything. And one of the things I was really, really grateful for is just knowing what the outcome was most likely going to be. Cause I think there was still a little bit of me that believed that God could work a miracle. So I'm kind of holding on to that as well. But we were able to put a lot of things in place knowing her outcome beforehand. So that meant pulling together a team at the hospital, the social worker, the chaplain, the nurses, you know, kind of putting together a birth plan. We planned for a lot of skin to skin. We comfort cot. So they, the hospital had one of those so that they, you know, she could stay in the room with us after she passed. We had a playlist that we played during my C-section for her. Yeah, we just put all, they did the hand and the foot moldings for us, all these things, right? We're putting all of this in place. I had someone, you know, come in to do photos. Just, it was really an opportunity to make a lot of those decisions beforehand so that when she arrived, we didn't know how much time we were going to have with her. And so we really just wanted to spend that time with her. So I had my C-section on March 11th of 2021. I think I was at 37 weeks. Everything went fine, thank God. And we did just that. We had her playlist going. We had skin to skin. My husband was very adamant about having skin to skin, which I thought was pretty interesting. And so she actually passed in his arms about an hour and 45 minutes right after she was born. And yeah, she's our sweetest little angel. Like, yeah. So I think that's the bulk of our story.
Oh man, I love it. I love that. I love that he was adamant about doing skin to skin, and it's mainly because he didn't carry her, right? You know, so that was his time to bond with her while she was still breathing. Oh my gosh, you know, like this. Yeah. What I love and the care and attention, you know, especially doing this work that I do, is that you all had the time to plan. Most of us don't get that time where we have we can make those decisions. And you all are very meticulous about, you know, your birth plan and what you were playing in the room and how the atmosphere was set. And it made it a more peaceful environment for you, I'm sure, because you knew, you know, you knew what the outcome could be, even though you were holding on to hope that God would work a miracle. And I think the miracle in of itself is the fact that she lived an hour and 45 minutes and that she didn't just pass away when she was born via C-section, that you all did get to see her breathe and was alive and did create those memories of those pictures and just had that actual time when she was warm. Because, you know, some people don't get that time of understanding. Mm-hmm. And obviously, for those of us who experience loss, time is so precious. Those first few moments, those first memories, we will never get back. So being able to have that time is nothing but a gift from God.
Absolutely. Yeah, there were these like little surprises from her. So we didn't know how much she weighed because there was no amniotic fluid. We did not get a lot of, you know, accurate readings of her weight. At some point I wasn't even getting, you know, the cute little sonogram pictures anymore. They would be like, oh, so here's maybe an eye. Like that was kind of hard as well, because we were going to continue to get the sonograms and couldn't get, you know, those clear pictures. But she turned out being 6 pounds and 4 ounces. So when the doctor said, I was like, what is this big old baby? Like, and then she had like a hair full of hair. Like she was just this chocolate little sweetness. Like we were so surprised because we didn't know what to expect with her condition, right? So yeah, she was big old baby, did lots of skin to skin. We named her Angelique Malwena Yawa Daniel. So my husband is of the Elway tribe from Ghana. And, you know, he, very early on, he was like, as the ancestors have given me a name, her name is going to be Malwena. And that, you know, that's her, like her Ghanaian name, which means God gives. And then in his tradition, they also receive a name for the day that they were born. So that's where the Yawa comes from. And then she has like a more traditional first name. So we went with Angelique, but she was a big old healthy little thing and just you're right. Just that time that we had, because we didn't know. I think my other biggest concern was she going to be in pain, because her lungs didn't develop. So there was this, you know, this concern that was she going to be struggling to breathe? And so the nurse really, she was really mindful of that. She was like, if there's some distress or, you know, some pain, we kind of maybe see it in the forehead, like the wrinkling of the forehead. So I was kind of looking out for that. She made these little like noises. She never opened her eyes, unfortunately. But yeah, it was something to, you know, have to hold her in that process of her transitioning. And I think her being in my husband's arms was probably the best place, because I don't know that I could have handled that. But yeah.
Hey sisters, wanted to pause quickly for an update from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Did you know that you can get affordable private therapy anytime, anywhere? BetterHelp can help you match you with the right therapist, particularly for therapists of color that are in your area, for yourself, your partner, or even other teens in your home. Let's help match you with the right therapist by using our offer code with BetterHelp. Sisters in Lost listeners get 10% off your first month with using the offer code betterhelp.com/sisters. So for those of you who are listening and looking for affordable private therapy anytime, anywhere, use the code SISTERS to get 10% off your first month. That is betterhelp.com/sisters, and join the Sisters in Lost community and the listeners all over the world who are using this affordable private therapy with BetterHelp. Once again, that's betterhelp.com/sisters to get 10% off. Thank you so much to BetterHelp for sponsoring today's podcast.
Absolutely. So after that, did you all go ahead and make arrangements? Did you have a funeral? Did you all cremate her? What was those next steps like?
Yeah. So prior to, we had already identified a funeral home and where we were going to lay her to rest. I had, you know, traditionally in my family, I've never known anyone to be cremated. And I considered it. My husband, on the other hand, traditionally and culturally for him, he was like, nope, we're not cremating her. We're going to bury her. And so that's what we did. Oh, I will say we also, we made sure to get a piece of her umbilical cord, so that my husband was really, really, it was important to him to have that piece of her so that he can bury her also in his home country. And he did that when he went home in his, where his father and his family is from. So we did, yeah, we buried her. And my husband was also very insistent. He was like, I want to be the one to install her headstone. And so we started to come up with all these ideas of what that could look like. And it was something that we did together. So it was a small cemetery. And so we had the freedom to do that. And so he installed it and put the cement down. We laid bricks around it. And then I painted it all white. And then we laid out some white rocks. And so it was just a way for us to be able to kind of still parent her and still honor her in that way of doing it ourselves. And so we've put a lot of time and attention to her resting place. And we go pretty often and just kind of sit out there with her and talk to her. Yeah, it was very hard just, you know, even leaving her at the hospital. Like, is she going to be in good hands? And how is she going to get to the funeral home? But yeah, so we did do a burial. We initially were going to do it by ourselves, which I don't know what I was thinking. My husband was like, we can't do this by ourselves. We have to have someone come in and support us, right? So, but we're both, again, new to the city. We don't have a church home. Like, who do we bring in to support us? And so thankfully he was working and he met a minister at his job, and he came and his wife, and they had experienced something similar. And so they were there for us. They came to the viewing. It was just the four of us. They came to the viewing because, again, we're in the middle of a pandemic, right? Like, this is all taking place very just isolated. And that was really unfortunate, but they were super supportive. They came in, they prayed with us. He said some words at the gravesite. And they were just really supportive. But so, yes, we did have a funeral.
So how was those next few months? Obviously, we were going back mm-hmm. into all the craziness of Omicron and the Delta variant. And you are away from family. He's away from family. And y'all are, you know, really just have each other to walk mm-hmm. through with this loss, with grief, what healing looks like. So how did you really move through dealing with your grief and coping with your loss?
Mm-hmm. So for me, again, just knowing beforehand, like, I found a therapist before she was even born, and I started seeing a therapist beforehand. For him, he just kind of threw himself into work, and that was his way of kind of, you know, staying focused and busy and things of that nature. I sought out all kinds of resources, your podcast being one of them. I mean, just being able to hear other women going through some similar losses was really, really helpful, because you feel really isolated and alone in that process, and not knowing other women around you who've probably gone through it, because you've just never talked about it. And so being able to find other stories was really, really helpful. My faith kept me going, because now I'm kind of like, you know, mourning her loss, but also thinking ahead of, well, when can we try again? Like, I'm getting older. Like, how is this going to win? And being very afraid that, you know, it wasn't going to happen as easily as it did the first time. So, you know, I had to really lean on my faith and trusting the promises that God had made me over the years regarding, you know, me wanting to have children. Like, that, those promises did not just fall away because this happened, right? This was just part of the journey. So really just trusting his perfect plan in that sense, which some days was really, really hard. Because I was really angry with God of like, how, why would you let this happen? Like, why would you let us get all the way this far in the journey for something like this to happen? I also, books was very helpful. So I pulled, like, just hearing other stories, book recommendations was really helpful. I'm trying to think what else. Other people looking out for us. We did have some support, like people were sending flowers and things of that nature. So that was really, really helpful. I remember one of the doctors, before we left the hospital, he came in and he said, you know, I've already ordered you some sleeping medication. He was like, because you're probably going to find it hard to sleep. And that was something I didn't even think about. And sure enough, like those first few nights at home, we could not sleep. And so we were so grateful that we had someone kind of think about that on our behalf before we even left the hospital. So that was helpful. But just trying to figure out how we can memorialize her. You know, I was already had ideas of, well, for her 1 year anniversary, we want to do this. And, you know, we're making all these plans to decorate her resting place. Her presence is all over our house. Like, it's just, you know, the hospital gave us like a box and it had like candles and tea and things of that nature in it. And so I kind of continued to buy those candles, that same tea. It was just something that reminded me of her. So I bought plants in her honor. Just, I was always thinking, I would still even like, you know, I'm like, okay, so she would be 6 months this month. And if I'm in the store, I'm like, okay, let me go ahead and get this cute little 6 month onesie. And mostly for her honor, but also in faith for her siblings that were going to come, right? So just finding different ways to like parent her, even in her absence. I got a bunch of teddy bears. Like, the hospital gave us one. And then I got one built at Build-A-Bear with her heartbeat in it. And then I learned about Molly bears. So like, we have all these bears around the house. And so they're super comforting. But yeah, we just trying to make sure that her presence is felt in every way. And because I was pregnant, gave birth, all in the middle of a pandemic, I didn't post any of this on social media. It's like, I want people to know that she existed, right? She came to this earth and she was living and breathing, and she wasn't with us long, but she's a part of me. And I just want people to know her. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. And I didn't even know Build-A-Bear did that. Obviously, I knew Molly Bears, but that mm-hmm. is amazing. I didn't realize Build-A-Bear mm-hmm. did that. So you all hear that, definitely mm-hmm. save those heartbeats on your phone yep. audio and go get you a bear built. This is so yep. sweet. I definitely have all the same for my first loss, and then ended up getting something very similar when I had my son to kind of complement what I had with my other losses. So I love that you have created memories and continue to do so, especially now as it's almost been a year since your loss. Mm-hmm. So what do you plan on doing for this 1 year? You know, I call it heavenversary, you know, happy birthday anniversary in heaven.
Yeah. So this idea came very early on after she passed. I was already thinking about her 1 year. And so I wanted to thank the people who were there for us, who were present for us in our time. And if I'm thinking about, okay, if she was here and we were having her first birthday, right, what would that look like, right? There'd probably be party favors, a little gift on her behalf, right? So I've curated this box, and it's going to have like the candle that I love that reminds me of her. It's going to have the tea that I like that reminds me of her. I found these cute little butterfly magnets, and they're going to say like rest in heaven, baby Moena. And her color's purple, right? So they're going to have like a little purple tassel on it. We are getting some cards made in her memory with her picture on it. And we're going to send those out to people who were just super supportive of us during our time in her memory. Because again, like, you know, I didn't post this, so people don't have pictures of her. So this would be like a printed picture of her. And then they'll have this magnet to kind of post on the refrigerator to remember her. So yeah, I just want people to know that, again, that she existed, she was here, and she's going to be a part of me forever. So I need you to know that when you see me, that you see me as her mother, right? That she was here. So yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Absolutely mm-hmm. love that. Love that what y'all mm-hmm. are going to do for her to celebrate her heavenversary and honor her memory, because y'all are her living memory. So yeah. I would love for you to share with us just, obviously, we talked about your husband before we started pressing record and being Ghanaian. So let's talk about the cultural differences, because I think that, especially with death, because mm-hmm. I've interviewed a lot of folks from West Africa, really all over the continent, and mm-hmm. just the differences in how Americans approach death and, you know, West African cultures approach death are very different. So mm-hmm. can you share if there is any differences on how your husband and his family have coped with this news compared to how you and your family have dealt with grief and loss?
Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, his father and he was raised by a stepmother. They experienced something similar. So they were not, this wasn't new. Like, they had experienced the loss and they had gone through this grief. And so his father was able to really be really supportive, and so was his stepmother. I think the biggest difference was how we were going to, either we were going to cremate or bury her. And he was like, no, we don't cremate people. and I, like, all the people that got cremated are witches, and she's not a witch, so we're not doing that. So like, that was out of the question off the bat, because I was really considering it, because I had seen other couples who had done the cremation and they had the ashes. Like, that was a very present thing in their home. And I was like, oh, I would love to have that. Right. And he's like, mm-mm. And so my biggest concern now is, if we ever leave Texas, I would feel like I'm leaving her behind. And so that's something that even bothers me. I think another difference was, after she passed, I wanted her to stay in the room. Like, I wanted to continue to hold her. We had the comfort cot. And for him, I think culturally that made him very uncomfortable, that we just don't nurture a dead body at this point, right? Like, so I I think those are kind of the biggest difference. And again, he wanted to make sure that a piece of her was going to be buried in his village where his family is from. And so we were able to do that. So we did the umbilical cord, a piece of the umbilical cord. I'm trying to think if there was anything else that kind of stood out. I don't think so. Yeah, those are the major things, like how we were going to bury her. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way when I ended up leaving Charlotte. Charlotte's where my son is buried. I felt the same way. It was like, oh my gosh, I left Charlotte. Now he's not with me. But, you know, obviously we can go back to North Carolina and go visit him. Sure. It's the same thought process. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm leaving a piece of me somewhere else. But I understand the thought process compared to if you had.
And then I'm like, how can I make sure that wherever we move to that she, like, do we have a garden for her? Or do we plant flower? Like, that piece of her still needs to be able to come with us. One of the things I kind of regret was not getting a piece of her hair. Like, I would have loved to kind of get a piece of her hair. I wish I had thought about that beforehand. But, so... You can't think of everything.
No, you can't think of everything. No, the things that you have are definitely the memories you created. Because I thank God for the time for that for you. Because it's hard. It's hard on anybody. No one even knows the options or the decisions that they have to make. And they're just faced with the news, right? So you're shocked because, oh my gosh, now my baby doesn't have a heartbeat or my baby is going to pass away because of X, Y, and Z. And then now you want me to make all of these decisions. Let me cope with this first before we have to make decisions. Right. I think I love that about your story, obviously. So after it was all said and done, did you all have an autopsy on the body or were you all kind of content with the diagnosis they gave at 20 weeks?
We were pretty content because, like I said, I had done a lot of research to kind of have some more understanding about this condition. I found a Facebook group very specific for mothers who had gone through this very thing. So that was helpful. So even knowing kind of like how long she would potentially live after she was born, knowing that she probably wouldn't open her, I knew a lot to expect just based on being in that group of women. We did see a genetic counselor, but there wasn't a lot of information they can give us. And just kind of being in that group, I knew that a lot of it, the doctors were just told them and us that it's probably just a fluke, right? It's just something that happened. There's really no explanation for it. We did have my placenta tested for any genetic thing, and that came back fine. They suggested that we get our kidneys ultrasound to see if there's anything there. I was fine. My husband was fine. So we were fairly content with the diagnosis. And I did not want to, there was nothing that was going to change the outcome, right? So I did not want to bury myself doing that when I could be, spending time with her, memorializing her, even when she was still with me. Because like I said, she was still moving and kicking and very active until she was born. So we did not do a whole lot in that area. And I think at this point, there's probably two living children who've been able to get the experimental treatment, which they would inject the mother with like a fluid mimicking amniotic fluid so that the baby's lungs develop.
Well, I guess it wouldn't be an amnio infusion because you didn't have amniotic fluid, right? Or very minimal amniotic fluid.
I want to say it might have been amnio fluid, but whatever it was something to kind of help the baby's lungs develop. So that way, when the baby is born, at least their lungs are working, and then they can, as soon as they get strong enough, maybe do a kidney transplant so they can get the functioning kidneys. So But like I said, we were kind of outside of the realm of that criteria, and it wasn't even being offered, because I definitely would try to, like, I talked to my maternal fetal medicine specialist, and I was like, I heard about this. Can we, like, he was like, I'm going to be really realistic with you that that is a very experimental treatment and it doesn't have a lot of success and things of that nature. So we decided not to go that route.
Gotcha. Yeah. Understood. So how did your body deal with fibroids through your pregnancy? Did your fibroids grow back, the ones that you had removed from years prior? Because I know a lot of folks who have fibroids, that's a big scare for them when they get pregnant, the added hormones, and sometimes mm-hmm. those fibroids do start to grow back, especially if they had a myomectomy.
Thankfully, they did not grow back. I think by the time I went for my follow-up, I probably had, I knew that I had maybe one or two really small ones, like 2 centimeters, really small, prior to the pregnancy. And so by the time I went for my follow-up, I think they were probably the same size. They hadn't grown much. And there might've been one more, a third one that was around the same size. So thankfully they did not. And that was, again, I had my myomectomy in 2019. Yeah. So they had not grown back. Any bigger or during pregnancy. So yeah, no issues there.
So what's the next steps in your family planning process?
So we are trying again. We've got the clearance, and so we're just moving in faith, because I'm 41 now, and like, where did the time go? Like, how did this happen? And yeah, so we're just moving forward and we're trying again. And prayerfully we'll be able to have a baby this year. A healthy baby this year.
Yeah. Absolutely. In Jesus' name, we are definitely going to claim it for
in
you.
In Jesus'
pray
name, yes.
We pray for you as you navigate that journey. So what encouraging words can you leave with our listeners? I mean, obviously you have gone through what no woman wants to go through, get pregnant, get bad news, and then have to, you know, go throughout the whole pregnancy knowing that your baby could possibly die and then die at birth and do it on top of having fibroids. Like, it's just, it's like, oh my goodness, all of these different things that add into it. So what encouraging words can you leave the mom, the listener here who is going through their own journey to become a mother, may have had some ups and some downs and some setbacks, but they are hoping and praying for a baby just like you are in 2022.
Mm-hmm. That's hard. We're all so different in that sense. But I think the biggest thing for me was really reflecting back on the promises God made to me through his word, and then through dreams that I've had, through instances that I've had with other people, just really holding on to those promises. So the times when I was like, this is never going to happen for me, you know, I'm getting older, like just thinking about what life could be if we didn't have children, but really holding on to those promises at the end of the day, and trusting God for his perfect plan, because at the end of the day, that's all I wanted was whatever your will is, let it happen, even if I don't understand it, even if I don't like it. Yeah. And seeking the support of other people, I think, was really, really encouraging. And for someone like me, that was really, really hard. But I knew that I could not do this by myself. So I made sure to seek friends who were going to pray with me. So, you know, making sure that you're not isolated in it, especially now, because we're in the middle of a pandemic, which is already isolating. Just seeking the support that you need, and cherishing whatever time that you have, whatever, you know, gestation, age that you lose your child, just being there and being present and making those memories, so that you will have them for an eternity, right? Or for, you know, however long you're here on this earth. But encouraging word. I'm trying to think what else was really helpful. I don't know. Yeah.
No, that's good. No, that is perfect. I think that obviously I've enjoyed our conversation, and I appreciate mm-hmm. you being able to share your story with us, because mm-hmm. a lot of people may not have the gift of time that you have,
had in creating those memories and planning, and then really honoring your daughter the way you have and will continue to do. Obviously, I know that you all are going to continue to do great things to continue her memory and, you know, definitely incorporate your future children into honoring her as well. So I'm excited about your journey and excited about the future babies that are coming. But where can we connect with you after this episode?
So I'm not very active on social media, so I'll just say throw that out there. I'm on Facebook, Christina Daniel. Yeah, I'm super, super active. Yeah. To find me, that's where you can find me. I'm welcome DM. I used to see so fit in that way, but.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Christina, for the podcast. It is a pleasure to share your story. And like I said, we're going to keep you on the prayer list.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. For show notes, go to sistersinloss.com. To stay connected with us and join the Sisters in Loss community and receive my weekly newsletter, please go to sistersinloss.com/newsletter. That is sistersinloss.com/newsletter. Please rate and review this episode, and I will talk to you next week.